Okay, greetings everyone. We're delighted to go ahead and get started. It's just about 5 p.m. here on Thursday, August 1st, 2024. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and I'm delighted to let you know that we have a couple of exciting guests with us, surprise guests with us for our meditation. Here they are. Yay! Wow. Lisa is here.
The view is very different.
From this side, right? So it's just, Lisa just arrived here about 2 o'clock, and we're enjoying our time together. But we're going to dive into our meditation now. We're going to get to serious work for the animals. So thank you both for joining us. We love you. All right, so we'll go ahead and get started. It's, like I say, this is the first Thursday of the month, our World Peace Meditation Gathering. We've been doing it every month now for, I think, gosh, we're in our third year. We started back in the dark days, in the dark days of COVID. And I'm glad. I feel like it's a good time to connect amid all the still ongoing and unfolding tyranny and absurdity that we see in the outer world. We have our solidarity with each other, with the vegan spirit of truth and love, and the respect for all living beings, which is really the core of veganism, honoring the solidarity of all living beings. So we're here in Hidden Valley Lake, California. I'm at the piano, so we usually like to start with a short, or not too short, but a, kind of a short meditation, and then open it up for any questions or comments you may be having. And also, I do have a copy of the Dhammapada here, which a few people have been asking if I could read a few words from there as a spiritual teaching. So if we have time, we'll go ahead maybe and do that as well. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with the meditation, and then we'll open it up for any questions or comments you folks might have. So here we go. Open up our minds and hearts now. To the inner light. That is shining always at the very core of our being. The light of truth, of loving kindness, of unity with all expressions of life. And we give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have right now to connect with each other and with the spirit of truth, the spirit of great compassion, with the silence out of which all the beautiful melodies emerge, and into which they all return again eventually. The silence. Breathing together with every exhalation, allowing ourselves to let go of any thoughts of the past or of the future, and entering into this moment, one of the most healthy, activities we can ever engage in is to abandon the grasping mind that is always comparing, judging, rotating back and forth between past and future, just letting that all go. Knowing that what we are was never born and will never die. We are what makes this outer appearance possible. Abiding in our true home, abiding in the truth that we are always at peace, no matter what the outer appearance may be. So we give thanks now for all of our brothers and sisters from all over this planet who share a common yearning to awaken to the truth that we are, to be vehicles of loving kindness, joy and creativity and freedom, harmony and abundance on this beautiful earth. We give thanks for the whole web of life here, for all of the beings that we refer to as animals, celebrating their lives in the water, in the air, down inside the earth and on the surface, with their amazing abilities and their vulnerabilities. And we hold in our heart the vision of the complete liberation of the animals from all human domination and exploitation. We hold in our hearts the commitment to do the best we can and to be an instrument of peace, of kindness and respect for all expressions of life. We see humanity awakening from the great cultural trance of herderism, coming into our inherent wisdom, we see our children raised in harmony with healthy food and relationships in a beautiful environment. As we do our best every day to live the teaching of ahimsa, of kindness and compassion. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of love and benevolence and goodwill, allowing our heart to fill with a sense of loving kindness for all living beings. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of love to radiate in ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole world with the light of love and kindness, excluding no one from our love. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, the yearning to help relieve the suffering of others, to do whatever we can to be a force for the highest form of love, which is compassion. And with every exhalation, we allow this compassion to radiate from our heart, filling the whole world with compassion. May all beings be bathed in the light of compassion, knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, a great joy that needs no cause or reason in the outer world, the joy of our true nature that is infinite and eternal, that is one with the source of all life. With every exhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to overflow from our heart filling the whole world with the truth of joy, the joy of being that needs no ownership or grasping, and finally, with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace, the great peace that arises automatically and naturally when our mind and heart are filled with love, compassion, and joy. We are at peace. So with every exhalation, we allow this peace to flow from our heart in ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole earth with peace, living beings are now, whatever the outer appearance may be, at peace, at one with the source of all life, abiding in peace. The whole earth bathed in the light of peace. Abiding in our true home, abiding in love, abiding in compassion, abiding in joy, abiding in peace. As we go through our day with everyone we meet or interact with, we radiate love, compassion, joy, and peace. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth, for this opportunity to contribute to the awakening of human consciousness, to the healing of the ancient wounds. Through rescuing our world from the delusion of animal agriculture, and of essential separation from nature and from our true immortal nature. So we give thanks, knowing this is so, giving thanks knowing that we are here to work together to build a more enlightened society, a world that cares for everyone and that reflects the truth of being. Thank you, everyone, for joining together in our August 1st, 2024 meditation, the World Peace meditation that we do the first Thursday of every month. And we have now some time for any questions or comments or concerns that anyone would like to bring up. Those of you know, this first Thursday gathering is basically open to the public. The third Thursday is closed, but this is open. And we focus less on the outer world challenges, although we can bring that up, but the main thing is to focus on the inner work that we're all engaged in, to clarify our consciousness and to awaken to our true nature during these few years that we're on planet Earth. Maybe it'll be a long, maybe it'll be many years. I just read the other day that Elon Musk talked about the fact that people used to live to be 400 or 500 years old or 1,000 years old. What the heck's going on? Modern medicine's making everybody die young. So, who knows? I've heard similar things in the esoteric traditions, the world's religions. But in any event, our physical body is temporary, but what we are is not temporary. And there's a really interesting statement that I read, I think a couple of days ago, by Joel Goldsmith. I don't know if you know Joel Goldsmith. He was a very successful spiritual healer back in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, through Christian Science, I think, and then he kind of went independent and healed literally thousands or tens of thousands of people. Because he would say that he never healed anybody. It was divine love through him that was healing. But he said something that I think is a good jumping off point maybe to consider. And the quote is, "The consciousness that we maintain is shown forth in the physical bodies that we present to the world." So that's the statement, and I just think it's a really good one. The consciousness that we maintain is shown forth in the physical bodies that we present to the world. And I think it's a good meditation, because we very often think that the physical body that we are shining forth into the world, that it somehow, if something happens to it, we need to have some kind of outer repair done by some expert that knows how to do that. And I think that the more we realize that the whole world, including our physical body, is an outpicturing of our consciousness, and that the best way to create a healthier body and a healthier world is to turn the light of our mind inward, because it's really that mind, that light, that is projecting, in many ways, our world. And we do co-create it together, of course. So that's the great challenge, I guess, the great mystery is, you know, where do I end and where does somebody else begin? And this, we see this more vividly than ever, I think, during these times when we're being deliberately, I think, in many ways, divided against each other. You know, that old saying from ancient Rome, divide et impere. Divide et impere, that means divide and rule. And so we are being very strenuously divided, I think, in many ways, on all kinds of fracture points. And it's important that we look beyond the things that divide us politically and socially and culturally and racially and sexually and all these different things, that religiously, and see the life, and I would say also from the point of view of our species, you know, really see and honor and respect all forms of life, including each other. Otherwise, we find that we become very easily manipulated, and the main way, of course, that that's carried out is through fear, through making us afraid of germs, or of climate change, or of too many bad people that we have to get rid of, like they're pests. So we live in an amazingly ripe time. I think what we see happening in many ways is the ripening of karma, of 10,000 years of animal agriculture. And so in many ways, it's a ripening, or you could call it a reckoning. It's a time of reckoning. We've been going along this pathway for thousands of years and hundreds of years, and the tempo keeps increasing. We're killing more and more and more and more and more and more animals faster and faster and faster and more efficiently. And as we do that, we're unfortunately kind of losing track, losing touch with the inner light that is our true nature. And so we're increasingly finding ourselves in cultural situations that disconnect us from each other and from nature and from our true beauty as human beings. So it's really up to us to turn that around. I think in the back of our minds that someone will save us. Maybe science will save us. Science will not. Science is the opposite. Or the technocrats will save us, or politicians, somebody. Or a religious teacher or someone. And I think it's really understandable that we look to people who have more power, it seems like. More understanding, more wisdom, more wealth. They can do more. But the message has always been the same for thousands of years, which is that it's up to us to work out our salvation with diligence ourselves. And one of the things I think that's missing nowadays, which I've mentioned a few times, is the bigger context of what we are as beings. That this lifetime is just but one of many. I think it's really important to have no doubt about that. The way I live my life now, the actions I take today, the thoughts I have today, and what I say today, it builds the foundation for what I will experience tomorrow. Right? We know that. I mean, that is so clear and obvious that as we live our lives right now, today, that when I wake up in the morning, it's going to be a continuation, basically, of what I did today. I'm not going to be in a different house or suddenly a different person or have a different whole thing. So we're building every day, we're building, and we're creating our tomorrows from our todays. And it's the same thing with a lifetime. You know, how we live now in this lifetime, that's it. That creates the template. And so it's important to be aware that, as I've said before, really, all the virtues help us to awaken, the virtues of love and kindness and chastity and generosity and so forth. And one of those is diligence. You know, diligence is the willingness, not just the willingness, but the actual yearning to work hard, to understand more deeply and to contribute to the welfare of others. That diligence is the fuel, really, I think, in our spiritual path. And the fuel comes from our yearning, the yearning that we have. And so I think that's a fundamental question, really. Like, what do we yearn for? What do we really want? What is our deepest desire? And again, we live in a society where we're taught that we're supposed to be desiring worldly things. More money, more wealth, more status, more likes, more friends, more relationship, excitement, and all these things to make us special and somebody and comfortable. And, you know, it's a really, and the thing is that, as we discover through maybe multiple lifetimes, is that this following these desires doesn't actually bring deep inner peace. It never comes from anything outside of us. And so the good news is that there's this other force, which is suffering, right? I mean, when we try to find happiness through accumulation and the worldly struggle, we have suffering. And the suffering, which seems to be our enemy, is actually our friend. Because in many ways, it's the suffering that then guides us to have a higher yearning, right? To yearn for something higher. To yearn for an inner peace that's not dependent on whether people say things I like or don't like, or how much money I have, all these things. That we, our being is eternal and abundant and needs nothing. And we're here to give, not to try to get something. And to really have a yearning to absolutely understand that and embody that, a flame, a burning yearning. And the brighter that flame is and the stronger that yearning, the more we're propelled in this positive direction, the direction of awakening. But we live in a world that's challenging because every institution in our society is dedicated to trying to put that fire out, quite honestly, quite directly. Our educational system is absolutely opposed to us connecting with our inner wisdom and going for the light of transformation and awareness, or even thinking critically and so forth. Our medical system, for sure, the way we birth children, my goodness, the poisoning, the rampant poisoning that our bodies and minds are exposed to through not only physical toxins, but toxic propaganda spewing everywhere. And the political economic system, all these systems are just trying to throw water on this flame of the yearning of awakening. So it's really essentially up to us to blow on the flame, right? To keep the flame alive of yearning, to awaken for the benefit of all beings. And I think the other key here is that we naturally begin to seek out a sangha or community of like-minded people to help strengthen the spiritual path that we're on. And so the two good things happen out of this. We create kind of this positive, virtuous cycle where the more we connect with the inner joy and freedom that are our true nature, the more we become contagious. We begin to naturally bless others without trying to bless them. Just by smiling and living our life, we're blessing others. And then we can talk, we can maybe write a book, or we can do a class, or we can do a video, or we can have a conversation, whatever it is. Whatever actions we're doing, we're being contagious and helping to raise vibrations where people are open to it. But the other thing is, besides that, that's going out, then the other thing is that we then begin to attract all kinds of fantastic things. We begin to attract like-minded people. We begin to attract situations that will help our vision to unfold. The stronger the yearning, the more attractive we become to things that we could never imagine. Joseph Campbell used to say, "And doors will open where there were no doors." You know, when you're on the hero's journey, you know, the journey of transformation, of really connecting with our true nature, you can't figure it out. Like, how you're going to get from here to there? You just go every day. Just every day, we do our best, and somehow the doors open that we could never figure. We could never plan it, and it's so much way better than we could ever plan it. So that's the beautiful thing, I think, underlying this whole idea that I said in the beginning. The state of consciousness that we maintain shows forth the body that we present to the world. The body is our physical body. It's also our mental body, emotional body, and we present it. We're presenting that to the world all the time, whether we know it or not. So there's no, the best, and the end, the world that we perceive is also a manifestation of our consciousness. So this is tremendously helpful, I think, to see this, because it basically liberates us from the prison that is being constructed by the globalists all around us. And the only way we're going to be successful, I think, as a species against the tremendous technological power of the globalist agenda is the spiritual awakening of humanity. We're really called now, I think, to just get to a higher level where we are not afraid of whatever they have to try to do to force us to take their vaccine or to believe in their fear mongering that they're always doing to divide us from each other, and to do our best to shine the light and encourage each other. So that's my thoughts for the moment. Let's see how we're doing. Yeah, we have some time. Does anyone have any comments or questions? If we don't have, I also have my little book that I really have been thinking it would be nice to read a little section out of. We used to do that about a year or two ago, and I never did it because we always had so many things we wanted to talk about. But if there isn't anything, go ahead.
I had a question about I've been trying to read the Dhammapada a bit and also some of the ancient Hindu texts, the Vedas. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, this is Anne.
Yes, it is. Sorry about that. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So I've been trying to spend a little time with reading some of these ancient texts that I did try to when I was younger. Like the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, and one thing that I keep coming to is like, how do you know what translation to get? Because Sanskrit to English is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
And even with the Bible, like there's some of the traditional Judeo-Christian terminology I have a problem with, like the word righteousness. I really don't like that word. And I see it come up like in translations of,
mm-hmm.
Upanishads or I don't know about the Dhammapada, but so I would appreciate your recommendation about translations. I mean, particularly, I'm sure you could let us know what is your chosen translations for the Dhammapada, but also any of the other classics that you might know.
Right. Yeah, that's a really very pretty sophisticated question, because most people just read a translation and they think, well, that's it. That's what he said. And, I've had the World Peace Guide translated into, 18 languages, and I can see it. People, even though I don't speak all these languages, I hear it all the time. This was a pretty good translation, but they missed this and they missed that. And so it's always a translation is always an interpretation. And so the best thing, of course, is if you can learn the original language. But the second best thing is, like you're doing now, to just use your critical ability and try to find what feels like the best. I've read, like for example, the Dhammapada. I've read maybe 4 or 5 different translations. This is not a very long book. The one that I use is the one by Gil Fronsdal, which is a pretty new one. The newer ones are sometimes better just because, as years go by, the translators get more and more sophisticated and they don't make the same mistake over and over again. But that's not always true. Sometimes they get worse, I think. So it's really tricky, it's tricky. And you're always, with any of these spiritual books anyway, the fact that they are spiritual books is that you cannot put it into words. You cannot put really spiritual teachings into words very well,
right.
Because their spirit is beyond matter. And so they're always just pointing anyway. And so even if you read it in the original language, you are very often just lost. What's he really trying to say, or the writer really trying to say? And then you add a translation on top of that, and it can be really hard. So you're trying to connect with your intuition and not allow the little ego mind to be trapped either by liking or not liking the words, what they are, and try to really see what is being pointed at. In the Zen tradition, the metaphor that's used is the finger pointing at the moon, right? You know, we tend to get fascinated with this finger we see, and right in front of our nose is this finger, and we're trying to figure out what the finger's all about, and to see that that finger is pointing to something far, 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 far beyond. And that's what the meaning is. So for me, I've found of the ancient texts a number of different translations. Let me think. There's one I'm reading right now, also the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Yes.
Important book.
Yes. Yes.
And that one, I'm reading a translation by I.K. Taimini, T-A-I-M-N-I. It's a translation and commentary. I mean, it's a huge book. But it's really good. I mean, he breaks down every single word. He gives the Sanskrit. He gives the definition of each word for each of the phrases, puts it together, and you know, so like you really dive deep. And so it takes forever. But I think the more you go deeply into it, the more you find you get more sensitive to the translations and how some are better than others. You know, it's a lot of it's intuitive. The other thing that's kind of interesting, I'll just mention, it's kind of related, which I think is interesting. I just read this the other day, is that one of the religions has far, 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 far more books and writings than any of the other religions. Does anyone know which religion it is that has far more writings than any of the other religions?
Jewish, Judaism.
It's the Buddhist. There's more books, Buddhist sutras and commentaries, than all the other, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, yoga, Taoist, Confucian, whatever. All of them. There's more than twice as many Buddhists as all the other ones combined. So they really, something about Buddhism, it really inspired people to write a lot. And even myself, I have a book called Buddhism and Veganism, so. But I think there's a tremendous amount of writing, I mean, there's literally millions and millions of books, if you include all the commentaries. And so ultimately, what is being pointed at is very simple. It's really not that complicated. But it's just finding an expression of it that actually helps to build our understanding and inspires our yearning and our, our diligence, like I was saying. And I think that's really a very, you're on the path. I mean, it's a great question. And I have all kinds of books here, all kinds of translations. And people will argue over the whole thing forever too. It's hard to say. I don't know. I'm going to stop there. If anyone else wants to say anything more, does that help, Ian?
It does help. Yes, very much. Because I'm all at sea when when I'm looking to buy something online, I see all these different translations. And
I know
Sanskrit is so different, and as in Aramaic has to be so different from English.
Right.
Trying to read the Bible,
Exactly. Yeah. No, there's a guy named Rocco Errico who's an Aramaic scholar, and he translated the whole New Testament from Aramaic. It's really good. I mean, it's really so different than what we usually read as the New Testament. So, it's fascinating. The word pray, we translate it as pray, actually in Aramaic means to be open, like a trap. he has all these really interesting, the roots of the words, and explains it all. But you're right, if you go deeply into if you find a text you love, an ancient wisdom text, and read, it's good to read multiple translations until you get more and more of a feeling for it also, I think.
That's a good idea. I just wanted to say one thing, is that with the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, I really wanted to read them to find, to isolate the, to elucidate ahimsa, because so many yoga practitioners just disregard it. And I wanted to find in one of the, I mean, those sutras are the first occurrence of yoga being written. I believe before that it was just an oral tradition. So,
right.
So if I could find it unmistakably in that, that would
be... Yeah, oh, it's in there. I mean, it's in the, you know, the yamas and niyamas. You know, Himsa is the first of the yamas. And it's not at the beginning of the book. I thought, oh, it must be right at the beginning of the book. It's not. It's like way in there. It's not a very long book. But,
no, I know it's in there, but I wanted more than the word ahimsa. I wanted it explicitly stated that this is compassion for all beings, not just humans.
Mm.
And I did find something in the translation I have. I can't find it right now. But anyway, that was motivation for trying to really kind of hone in that, you know?
Right. Good. Yeah, there's some, you know, I mean, one of the things that I feel is when I read these ancient texts is just how profoundly wise these people were. They were so far ahead of us. Nobody today could write anything like this. You know, it's like we're like little children, just lost. And these people, their lives were more connected to the source, I guess, and they really discovered truths about the human consciousness that we've lost, but it's really part of our human heritage. They're very precious. These ancient teachings are so precious, and it's really important that we pass them on to future generations. So thank you for your serious studying of them. It's really important, for sure.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yes, Gino, you had your hand up. Did you still want to say something? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot, but I'm going to pare it down as much as I can. Listening to the meditation was very affirming and very true for me, something I do and aspire to when I'm not doing it. And for me, it's like, and has been for years, that I've been on a path of beyond self-realization, actually living in realization of who I am, who we all are, the oneness of everyone, you know, the I am, the it, the living in the moment, all of that. It's been forever. And at the same time, you know, periodically through my life, but especially since about 11 years ago, when I became a vegan and then got into animal rights work, and then that led me to be much more involved with really trying to be aware of what's going on in the world, in a, not from the regular media, but beyond that, you know,
right.
Like Big Pharma and, you know, reading this one author is really great. I don't know if you heard of him, Will Tuttle, you know, his books, they're great, especially his new one is wonderful. And the World Peace Diet was a huge influence to me. And so it's sort of like, I get caught up in a wave where I'm doing a lot of the inner work and, although it comes in pieces even when I'm not focusing just on inner work. But then the other part is I'm focusing on all of these things. But not to the point where it gets me, you know, really upset and really depressed and all of that, where I might need to be in, you know, counseled by Claire Mann, you know, to be wonderful. But I don't need that. I think I've learned how to balance.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, it still has an effect.
Yeah.
And I can't justify just doing the social justice or the inner work. It has to be both. I have to do both. So it's just an interesting thing. And I turned 74 in July. Yes, I'm older than you, Will. You must deeply respect me. And
I do.
Thank you, sir. And I have noticed in the last two or three years the so-called aging process, which, you know, you don't have to believe in, but it is taking place. And so I'm not the physical Gino I was two or three years ago at all. And I am having some maladies and so forth. And I know part of that is, you know, how you think in your mind you know, I get into all of this stuff, the quantum physics. I've studied to be a reconnective healing practitioner. That's very much about being in the now and helping people and so forth. Anyway, that's just kind of where I am right now. And so it's kind of a complex place to be, because this world is just really peaking out there in such a way that you know, you understand. Andy, who I think is on the call, she's also into another part of this, you know, you're like the 15-minute city, CBDC,
right.
That I'm aware of all that as well. So anyway, that I just wanted to share that.
Right.
If you have any feedback, please feel free.
Yeah, well, no, I think you're not alone in that sense of combining the inner work, meditation work, and like you say, the self-realization with meaningfully contributing to the what humanity is going through, and being informed, just making the effort to actually be properly informed is a huge job, I think. Mm-hmm. And then beyond being properly informed, then to actually share ideas and help other people to maybe understand what's happening too, because what was it? I guess it was H.G. Wells said that, you know, way back he said, civilization is a race between education and catastrophe, you know, and so we do have, I think when we do know, when we understand something, we have a moral obligation to share that somehow with others. The question is, how do we share it? You know, some people, like Madeline, my wife Madeline is much more comfortable sharing through art and through meditation and little conversations with people, and then us kind of getting out there. I tend to be more like I want to share this out with through books and lectures and talking and just trying to, you know, share it that way. But I don't think we can ever say that one way is better or more effective than another. We don't know. You know, 1,000 years from now, when people look back, someone living now, they may say, well, he or she, they were the ones that really made the impact, you know, and they're mm-hmm. unknown to us now, perhaps. So I think that's, you know, I remember reading, because I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, and I remember mm-hmm. reading when Thoreau, you know, he published this book, Walden, which I taught, you know, in my college literature class, and he wrote, well, I published this book and, you know, 99% of them are just sitting in the garage. I guess nobody's ever going to read this, you know. Sitting in the, you know, he didn't say garage, but it was like this little shed he had. So anyway, it's just interesting. I think it's just, you know, I really admire your persistence and your emphasis on the quality of your consciousness, because I think that's really, really what it is. That's what makes the difference, is the quality of our consciousness. And if we can really take responsibility for that, mm-hmm. of our relationships and, you know, what we're eating and how we're speaking and how we're living, and then the day-to-day interactions, that's how positive changes actually happen. They don't happen from people getting out and yelling and fighting and screaming. It's really from the transformation of individual consciousness that is contagious. So I think that's the key thing. Try not to get discouraged to think that we're maybe not making enough of a difference, because that's the problem. Gandhi always emphasized that. He says that what you do may be little, but it's vital that you do it. You know, that little thing, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is the inner, you know, taking time to listen in the silence and reconnect with the source of our life.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. One last thing, Will. I know that you did take a swim in Walden Pond. Maybe I should do that as well. Do you think that'll help?
Oh, man, yeah. I've done many swims in Walden Pond. I learned to swim in Walden Pond, actually. I remember when I was a kid. I was just a little kid. I was only maybe 6 years old, and my mother and father said, well, you're going to go to swimming lessons. And I remember I went out in the front of the house, and it was the summer, and this bus came by with all these kids, and they were older than me. They were like, you don't know, 12, 13, 14. And it was 1959 or something. And they were all singing these songs, She wore an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot bikini that she wore for the first time today. You know, and I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I getting myself into here? I have to sit with these wild and crazy people. And then they let us off at Walden Pond at the beach. Back then, there was nothing about Thoreau back then. Walden Pond was just, they had a trailer park there, and they had a public beach, and it was just this place. Mm-hmm. And I got in the water, I had to learn the elementary backstroke, and then this and that and the other. And I went there for like every summer for like 8 years or something, taking all these different classes. But now it's a national sacred monument, and you know they got rid of the whole Walden Breeze. And it was interesting because my father owned the newspaper, and when I was in college. I worked as the editor of the Concord Free Press, which is a newspaper in Concord, Massachusetts. And I actually wrote the article about, you know, I went and interviewed the old people living in Walden Breezes, and they had to leave, and they were upset, you know, because it was a trailer park. Mm-hmm. And we're making way for the apotheosis of Henry David Thoreau. He's now a saint, and this is his place. But it was, you know, it's really beautiful. And when I go there sometimes, we lived in an RV, so we used to go and swim. We would swim across the whole pond and back. People from all over the world would make pilgrimages there. We meet people from China, from India, from Australia, all over Europe. And it's really quite an interesting thing. So there's something about, I think, certain places on planet Earth that are power spots, maybe, in some way, either because there's more energy there or because someone was there who just magnetized it somehow. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, one of those places somehow. So maybe before you pass on, get to Walden Pond and take a dip.
Thanks so much, Phil. I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I apologize. I don't know if I have time to read a little bit. I'll read a little bit of just to give you a flavor. We have a few minutes of this. So the chapter, the last chapter we read was chapter 15, which is happiness. It was a long time ago. Chapter 16, it's the translation, this word. It's the deer. It has an asterisk. I'm trying to see what that says. The deer. The deer means D-E-A-R, like what we really value. So this is. I'll just read a little bit of it. Practicing what one shouldn't, not practicing what one should, having abandoned the goal, clinging to what is dear, one comes to envy those who practice. Don't get entangled with what you long for or dislike. Not seeing what you long for is suffering. So also is seeing what you dislike. Therefore, do not turn anything into something longed for, for then it's dreadful to lose. Without longing or dislike, no bonds exist. Longing gives rise to grief. Longing gives rise to fear. For someone released from longing, there is no grief. And from where would come fear? Affection gives rise to grief. Affection gives rise to fear. For someone released from affection, there is no grief. From where would come fear? Infatuation gives rise to grief. Infatuation gives rise to fear. For someone released from infatuation, there is no grief. And from where would come fear? Sensual craving gives rise to grief. Sensual craving gives rise to fear. For someone released from sensual craving, there is no grief. And from where would come fear? Craving gives rise to grief. Craving gives rise to fear. For someone released from craving, there is no grief. and from where would come fear? People hold dear those who have done their own work, complete in virtue and vision, established in the Dharma, and who speak the truth. Anyone who aspires to the indescribable, the capital I, whose mind is expansive and whose heart is not bound to sensual craving, is called, quote, one bound upstream. And this is the last stanza. Relatives, friends, and companions rejoice when a long absent person returns from afar. Just so, in passing from this world to the next, the merit we have made receives us, as a family does the return of a beloved relative. Wow, so there's quite a lot there, but you can get the basic idea. The idea is that is the practice, right, the spiritual practice, is to not get entangled with attachments and aversions. I'm wanting this, not wanting that. This basic struggle. I wish I could have that. Or I don't want to have that. This is the thing. And like Anne said, the translation, you know, some of these words like affection, we think of affection as a nice thing. We say, well, I don't want to give up affection. But again, I think it's referring to kind of personal affection, this kind of attachment affection. And so the basic idea is that when we have craving, infatuation, longing, these yearnings, these things that we want to get something, that we end up being afraid and losing ourselves. And that in the end, it's those who are able to do their own work, as it says here, be established in the Dharma, which basically means be established in not only the Buddhist teachings, but in the way the universe is. And the way the universe is that there is no fundamentally separate self, that what we are is consciousness. It's not this object, this body that we identify with. And this last thing, I know it's time to wrap it up here. This last thing, I just love that. Relatives, friends, and companions rejoice when a long absent person returns from afar, just so in passing from this world to the next, the merit we have made receives us as a family does the return of a beloved relative. So this is a key point, I think, in many ways, at least in these ancient teachings, that how we live our life now, we build up basically a karmic positive balance, I guess you could say. If we're kind and loving and working to awaken, then when we go to the next, that's when we have big changes happen, when we leave this body. That merit, that understanding and wisdom and kindness that we have been working on developing, it greets us in a loving way. And so that's always traditionally been a very important point of the teachings, that if we may think that we get away with something, like we can live our life and get rich and by exploiting others, but that is also going to greet us when we leave this life. There's no escape. I mean, absolutely no escape. Don't ever worry about justice. I mean, that's not our concern, really, in the big picture. And we're here to be an embodiment of love. So, all right, well, yeah, we're a little bit over time. We have our two wonderful women here with us, and maybe we can close. I want to thank all of you for joining us on our first Thursday of August 2024 for our meditation. And we love to have our closing prayer. Please unmute your microphones so we can hear you if you'd like. We'd like to all say this together. And it's, as you know, it begins with compassion. So we can say it, we'll say it three times. Here we go. Compassion
circles the earth for all beings,
everywhere.
again.
Everywhere.
Compassion. Circle earth. For all beings.
Everywhere.
One more time with gusto. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. All right. Love you. Thank you.
Talking about magical places that with amazing energies that's magnetizing. This is the place. Dr. Tuttle, Madeline's home is the place.
I am so grateful
and so honored to be able to be in this special place. And so I invite all of you, you need to be come here and witness how magical this place is. With Dr. Tuttle and Madeline's magnetizing energy.
Wow.
Thank you, Lisa.
All right. Okay, well, thank you. Thanks so much, Lisa. Thanks, everyone. Good night. And multiply the message. We love you. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Much love.
Love you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Aloha.
All right.